Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
This is Live Paranormal Radio, brought to you by LiveParanormal.com, the number one interactive online community for everything paranormal, horror, and sci-fi.
Boundaries of Reality, with your host, Abel Garcia.
Welcome to Boundaries of Reality with your host, Abel Garcia, and his Netso co-host, Carla Farrington. Welcome.
How did you enjoy that intro?
I like it. It's really good.
Yeah, I thought instead of, like, going over the music, it'd be best to go before the music. And then I was like, oh, I got to get that music, you know, that new sound into the, you know, but first... So I did that as well, and I actually added, that was an extra add-on because I was like, well, she needs, like, news music, and so I thought I'd throw that in there, too.
It worked out really well.
I'm learning still. It's actually developmental stages between writing my biographical developmental essay on Clinton Eastwood Jr., and working on that and taking care of my son this morning, so I was actually multitasking like no one else in business.
I can't multitask lately. Hopefully that we can get that fixed. I used to multitask, but I'm getting really, really, really bad at it.
Oh, no. That's not good. Well,
yeah.
Actually, I would have to say this is Power Pack Saturdays. I was on Justin from LCGH's show, Justin Villarreal, last night.
Yeah, the one I called Justin Case. Yeah.
Yeah. actually, I was on his show last night, and I never really thought about it, but he actually said, even through the service that we're running off of, Boundaries of Reality and Paranormal Reality were, like, up there within the first top 10 on the actual entire service. And I was like, really? And so I definitely want to see this because I don't believe it, and I constantly tell people to come over here to Live Paranormal because that's where we are. But it makes me wonder if we're going to have to start doing what I did before, was just sit in the chat room with a thing pasted, join us at Live Paranormal. It seemed to bring people over more.
We have it posted on there, so you know, they can come over any time. You know, Rob and I toyed with the idea of opening the chat over there and just dragging them over when you're missing all the fun, you're missing all the questions and stuff, you can't talk to the host, you you know?
You know, definitely. I mean, I'm pretty sure, well, I definitely know there's people who have questions because they always seem to email me. And you know, maybe I should have like a 10-minute segment where I just answer viewer mail, you know, from the other, and just to show people, hey, if you come over here, we could answer, you know, much way quicker than me shooting back an email, because, you know, taking time to actually type out an email is a big portion of my time.
Oh, that would probably be good. You could do that. You could do that like the last 10 minutes of the show. Just answer your viewer email, and you know, and we can call it Dearest Abel rather than, you know, like Ann Landers.
Yeah, I would say take the best two and then answer it, and then maybe that will, you know, get people to come over here more often, because I know we do have, you know, for this hour segment, and I don't know if it's just because it's a prime time spot, 8 o'clock. Pacific Standard, 9 o'clock, and Central Standard, and here, of course, 10 o'clock. But it seems a lot of people tune in, and I'm pretty sure some people are tuning in at work, you know, maybe on the go. And, you know, we definitely need to make it a Power Pack Saturday. And it actually was, it was weird, because when I picked Saturdays was never really the busiest. It was Friday nights. And then for some reason it changed to Saturday nights were the busiest, Friday not so much, but then it looks like it went back, because the room doesn't really show much traffic, but we're showing really high traffic when it comes to actually live listens.
Oh, God, yeah. And well, from what Rob said, you know, all the embedded ones, like, you know, when we throw them out on, like, our Facebook, and we throw the, and the one that's in Live Paranormal isn't counted in that, so you might add, you know, another 50 to 100 listeners. You know, because
oh,
I've
definitely
gone back and looked, and I mean, even our archives, the ones, you know, Denise's iTunes don't even count. They don't even count those in the archives, and the archive listens over there are, you know, astronomical for Friday and Saturday nights. I mean, when I was on the team show with, you know, Justin Eric, the Paranormal Pastime, we would have 80 listeners, you know, just on the BTR side. That didn't count who was in chat or anywhere. I mean, you would think, you know, why would y'all want to listen to us? I'm like, oh my God. And I've seen the numbers that, you know, you pulled last year. You pulled really good numbers last year even, you know?
Oh, definitely. And I think it was a good move. I think people were getting tired of looking at us and getting into more of just listening to us was a good move that we decided to go with. And, of course, there's always going to be changes. And, you know, there's a planning change of, you know, a big change again. So, you know, everyone is just trying to focus on that and moving people over.
Exactly. I mean, you don't really have to. I mean, you're out there. If you want to, I can go ahead and open the chat over there.
You know, when we first started, I actually did that because the chat you could actually monitor.
Yeah.
And what you could do is you set it up to where, you know, if you have any questions, come over to liveparanormal.com and then you lock it. So people will ask questions. The questions will come through, but no one else would see them that's in the actual chat room. So maybe we should start doing that again.
Yeah.
So What strange, weird, or awesome news do you have for us today?
I found a few. Nothing really outstanding. It was a actually kind of quiet week. I found one. It was over at AOL. It was in Oklahoma. It was euthanized puppy lives again. A puppy that was announced dead together with the rest of his euthanized, wasted companions turned out to be full of life in the moment of finding a donor to adopt him. The puppy's name is Wally. It's one of the 6 puppies discovered in a cage that was cast off outside the animal shelter in Sulphur, Oklahoma, roughly a week had passed. The puppies seemed to be in a bad condition. Instead of fetching them into the shelter where they could, you know, they didn't bring them in because they were afraid that they'd make the other animals sick. So they took them to the vet and had them euthanized, and they were all pronounced dead. The bodies were placed in a dumpster, which was assumed to be unfilled that very evening. The next morning, the animal control, control officer checked the garbage container and discovered one little black and white puppy moving around. I thought that one was kind of good. Obviously, he didn't. I guess they should have named him Timex rather than Wally. What do you think about that?
Well, the euthanization, you know, they consider it not really a cruel punishment, but just like the, you know, regular death penalties that we have with the chemicals, you know, there's times where they don't work properly. So I think in this puppy's case, it was able to actually, you know, its body was able to get rid of these chemicals before it had affected it the way it was supposed to. So I think that's a great story, though.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good one for everybody to hear, you know. I mean, we don't usually hear that kind of stuff. And another one I thought was kind of interesting, it was earlier in the year. It said, the battle teams in Afghanistan over hamsters. The battle in Afghanistan isn't the only in opposition over Al-Qaeda and other terrorists, but also in opposition to hamsters and various varmints. A little number of fine Americans deployed in the nation are not there just to fight against terrorists. They have to fight birds that might shut down aircraft and flight, in addition to Indian crested porcupines, golden jackals, gray dwarf hamsters, and Libyan gerd, whatever a gerd is, a species of giant gerbil. So, in other words, I guess they would sod the plane engines. That's what they call it, sod. So, I thought that was really interesting. I mean, I didn't know gerbils could fly into, you know, plane engines. I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting. I don't know if it's necessary flying or being sucked in.
Yeah. I guess it would be flying because they kind of get sucked in there and fly in. How funny. I found a UFO one. I don't know. I just kind of scanned it last week when I did all this. My laptop's in the shop, so I had to go back and find everything that I had already done. I should email them to myself. It's about Shag Harbor, which is up there in Canada, in Nova Scotia. And it's one of the most bizarre UFO cases of all time. It's a small fishing village which is located at the crash, which is well controversy resulting from it. The village is so small that it was never drawn on maps for the incident. The local village always had their tales of ghost ships and giant sea monsters, but the UFO incident in 67 in Delhi gave them something that they would never truly forget. The rest of the world would remember them. On October 4th, 1967, when it all started, witnesses saw four bright lights in the sky, five young adults watching lights in a strange sequence. Then out of nowhere, the lights dived towards the water. Instead of going through the water, the lights seemed to have floated on the surface approximately half mile offshore. First witness thought they were witnessing a plane crash, immediately called the Royal Canadian Mounted Police for help. What they didn't know was the RCMP Constable Ron Pound had witnessed the lights himself. He was already on his way to the shore. When he saw the four lights attached to a flying craft, he estimated to be around 60 feet long, he made his way to shore with Corporal Victor Roberti, and other locals, where they witnessed a yellow flap floating on the water. As it moved, yellow foam was left in its wake. Eventually, either it drifted too far away for anyone to see or went underwater. The RCMP contacted rescue coordinator in Halifax and ran a traffic check with NORAD in Thackara, Nova Scotia. They were told that no missing planes were reported. All civilian and military aircraft were accounted for. The next day, the rescue coordination center filed a report in Ottawa with the Canadian Force Headquarters. The report says that a non-origin, and it says the area was searched by divers for several days, yet nothing reported to be found. Some people, however, believe that something was indeed found. Allegedly, an object was spotted on a sonar at a nearby submarine detection base, and the military said it was planning on salvaging whatever was there. Before they could, however, the second object appeared out of nowhere right next to the first. The military then decided to sit and watch before acting. At some point during the military's waiting, a Russian submarine witnessed the Canadian waters. when the military went to check it out, the two unidentified objects disappeared. Supposedly, the two crafts shot out of the sky, never to be seen again. Whether or not it's the truth of this scenario, nobody knows. No one in the military or civilian witnesses recorded have given off the record. Therefore, there's no actual evidence to support the claims that were really objects discovered on the sonar. Something did really crash in the water near Shag Harbor in 67. Whether it was an actual alien craft, Russian craft, or something else, we'll never know. There's a lot of those. They call them UFOs rather than UFOs. You know what I mean? Because they submerge in the water.
Yeah.
I thought we needed something like that. We haven't heard any good UFO stuff lately. You know?
Oh, definitely. And, you know, in the paranormal field, we cover everything that's paranormal. I mean, I've had a... me and my brother have had a UFO experience. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's cool. I think everybody's had one. They just don't realize it, you know?
Yeah. I mean...
I saw the one in stupid Stephenville before it made it to Stephenville, because it literally flew right over my town, you know? And nobody knew it. I mean, until they, you know, they were talking about all the strange lights in Stephenville. I mean, I knew about it because my husband was in the military, and he's still, like, building the aircraft in 72nd scale. So I've seen every military aircraft in, you know, existence from, you know, the World War planes, World War I planes, to the, you know, the new Joint Strike Fighter, you know. So I know what it looks like, so. You know, I couldn't buy that it was F-16s. I'm sorry, they're just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, our experience was of course, the identified flying object that was this bluish light, and just the pattern that it made. There's no way that an F-16 could have actually maneuvered in that pattern, or, you know, let alone a helicopter, because it was quick and it was. Really no set course. It did circles, it did squares, and it just, you know, flew all over. And, I mean, there was multiple sightings of this the next day. It was on the local news, of course, in the newspaper. It was sightings in Modesto, Manteca, Tracy.
Yeah.
And we were at Tracy, and it was just, you know, one of those nights where we used to sleep with our window open, with the blinds open, too. You know, so it stayed really cool in the house. And, you know, all of a sudden I woke up and I just saw this blue light. And my brother happened to be coming into the room, and his eyes got really big too. And we just stared at it, and it just started moving, you know. And it was an awesome experience because you're like watching this thing move, and it was moving quick. I mean, literally we were having troubles keeping our eye on the object because that's how quick that it was moving. And it came to a point where it finally just vanished, like streaked across the sky and was gone. And, you know, we just looked at each other. And, of course, the next morning, just to make sure, you know, I was just like, do you remember what we saw last night? He's like, yeah, that weird blue light that was in the sky. And I was like, okay, because it's on the news right now. So.
But think about it. It didn't make any noise like an F-16 would. I mean, you know, you hear the noise, you know, after it's pretty much gone. But, you know, when it's UFO or UFOs, there's no noise, you know. It's wild. You don't hear anything.
Oh, definitely. And, I mean, everyone was talking about the strange patterns that I actually saw it that night. You know, there's no way that, you know, airplane that we have right now could actually do that unless the military is not telling us something they should. And, you know, of course they commented too, saying they had no test runs that night. But you never know.
Exactly. I mean, you would know because you wouldn't hear it anymore. You know what I mean? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you don't hear anything. I mean, with the helicopter, you would hear it. I mean, they don't make helicopters that quiet. I mean,
no.
the French ones are about the quietest ones. What is it called? Air Speciale or whatever. And because their tail rotors is built into the tail. So it's a little bit quieter. But, you know, helicopters aren't quiet. You know, the jets on any of the planes aren't quiet. You know, you hear them no matter how high they're up. So, you know, even if it's a prop plane, you hear it. You know, so I don't know. I don't understand that. I don't know why they do that disinformation type thing.
Well, I mean, what they're finding all these super Earths now that could, you know, possibly sustain life and water and whatnot. And, you know, if you're finding that, we know there's got to be life on other planets, because if you're finding, you know, a planet that could actually sustain life like Earth, that means there's got to be life elsewhere.
Oh, exactly. I mean, we can't be stupid and short-sighted to think we're the only living, breathing whatever in the world. I mean, and you have to kind of look at from the, you know, the Zohar theory, you know, the Jewish mysticism, that there's 10 alternate realities, you know. So you have to look at, you know, it might be multidimensional rather than, you know, we're a universe inside of a universe inside of a universe inside of the universe, you know.
Oh, definitely. And I always think about that, you know. If we could sustain life on this planet, there's got to be other planets that could sustain life, too. Even if it's life that adapted a different way of being sustained, it's possible. I think it's either Mars or the moon that they actually found. I think it was the moon that actually has water beneath the ground itself.
Yeah, they found in, like, the polar ice cap in Mars, they found underneath the carbon dioxide polar cap, they dug down deep enough, they found actual hydrogen ice, which, you know, is frozen water.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to look at it from that viewpoint. It's out there. You just got to look for it.
Well, I think
sometimes this fall they're going to be sending another Mars rover.
Yeah, I watched an interesting show where it was talking about that as our different times change, like the Bronze Age, you know, gold, iron, and whatnot, that it was actually from seeds that were provided through asteroids that hit our planet. So as they start crumbling up and those many different pieces hit the planet, there's like a seed being planted, and then you get iron, you got silver, you know, platinum, you know, all kinds of different metals that we find. And, I mean, the theory is that humans were the same thing from an asteroid that hit the planet that, you know, became us life. And so it's possible.
And I thought, you know, I guess, you know, we're so short-sighted on a lot of things. I thought every planet had like a magnetic, you know, had their own magnetic base and stuff. They said Mars doesn't have one. What they have is little pockets of magnetic place. And that's why it's so barren, is the solar winds, our magnetic keeps it from coming, you know, getting us. It keeps it from burning us away, between it and our atmosphere. But that's why they said it's been like that for 3 billion years. So Mars and Earth are about the same age, that they're not really, you know, they're just, what will happen to us, you know, God knows when, basically, if we ever lose our magnetic force around our planet.
Definitely. So you have any more stories there?
No, that was it. I figured it was a nice big one, so.
That is a big one, and that's something you don't hear a lot of people covering, you know. It seems like I'm going to call it extreme paranormal junkies. They only concentrate on conscious energies or ghosts, and they don't expand as a real paranormal research team should and concentrate on everything that's unexplainable.
Well, you know my thoughts on that. I think that everybody in the paranormal should get together and share their evidence. You know, the cryptid hunters, the UFO people, because I think everything's interconnected, and that's why we haven't really, you know, put the puzzle together, because everybody's kind of going with their evidence. I mean, there's a lot of paranormal teams that are really going with their evidence. You know, it's mine, you know. It's kind of stupid, you know. I mean, that's how we need to find things out, is, you know, share, you know, and see how they interconnect.
Oh, definitely. And that's a great point. It's hard to share, though. I mean, more to, you know, someone will show me something, I'm able to tell them exactly what they're seeing, and then, of course, they get very defensive over it because they will want it to be really, you know, paranormal evidence. You know, there's a good show is My Ghost Stories. There's been several teams on there that have shared paranormal evidence where you just slap yourself in the head, and, you know, they post it on their Facebook pages and, you know, their social networks, and say, we're going to be on here because of this piece of evidence. And you're like, oh, yeah, you know what? That's just lens flare. You know, you could tell that a meter of some sort with glowing lights on it, and someone was just happened to be moving it when you took the picture in the dark. And, of course, you know, they quickly removed me and, you know, scrub out the information because they, you know, we're on TV now, you know. So that's the hardest part about sharing. I mean, if someone actually came to me and they gave me a logical explanation for some of the stuff I have been able to obtain, I would take it in for consideration. I wouldn't be like, yeah, you know what? No, it's paranormal, dot, dot, dot. You know, I was like, well, you know, that's interesting. I'm going to have to research that more. Yeah, and I don't know, that's just the way I am. You know, there's several things that I've tossed out because I'm just, you know what, there's an explanation for this. You know, that's my own evidence. I had one where you hear the zipping sound. I said, oh, that's my jacket. I must have unzipped it a little bit to get something out of my pocket.
Exactly.
But actually, tonight, I thought we'd cover the equipment that's used in paranormal research right now.
I was just going to say that a lot of people, they buy this equipment and they don't even, if it doesn't come with, if it comes with instructions, they don't read it. They don't use it right. So, yeah, this is going to be a very, very, very interesting show.
It definitely is because, yeah, they buy this equipment. For one, they don't know what it does. Two, they don't read the instructions on how to use the equipment. And number three, they don't actually research their own equipment. They just take it at face value. So whatever the pretty much data it collects, they get excited because, they didn't read the handbook or they didn't actually research to see, why am I using the K2 meter?
Exactly. I know the K2 meters and the millimeters, they don't really come with the owner's manual, but there's places and people out there on the internet that can, you know, fill you in with what you need to know, you know. You know,
I'm not talking
about the guy that built it. I mean, there's reputable people out there, you know, quantum mechanics and stuff, that you can pose a question to them. There's a couple groups that I belong to on Facebook that, you know, I'll go on and go, hey, Dave, I got this and this and this. What should I do? And, you know, David Ramsey will fire off and tell me exactly what I did wrong. Usually he gives me the, you know, Carly, you're being stupid before that, but it doesn't really bother me.
Well, I love Dave.
He's a great guy.
Actually, I did the research, a thorough research on the K2 meter, and it pretty much came to the conclusion that it's useless in an investigation for several reasons. Passing through signals sets it off, of course. You know, man-made frequencies will set it off. I've seen a radio set one off, a car radio, because it's picking up all kinds of frequencies. Instead of actually measuring the ambient energy that's in the atmosphere. So when it blinks really quick, it's just a man-made frequency, and sometimes that blinking really quick can make it set itself off because it puts out its own electromagnetic signature too. So you take like a cell phone, and this is a test I did. I took my cell phone and I hit internet really fast and I shut it off. So it blinked really fast and then it just stayed on. It went all the way to red, and I said, that's really interesting. Why is it doing that? Unfortunately, the way it was created, it will start generating its own electromagnetic resonance. And that's the reason why I started using the K2 to determine if there's man-made frequencies. If there's man-made frequencies, it always goes off. I did testing on the natural tri-field and the tri-field meter that's made by Moditronic. And, you know, those man-made frequencies do not set it off. The Moditronic does have troubles when it gets around LED and plasma TVs, and this includes that they're off, too. The natural tri-field doesn't pick up that resonance of energy. So I highly trust the Moditronic as long as I'm not standing, I would say, 2 feet close to a television set. LED or a plasma, and the
you have to kind of look. It might not just be the TV putting out the high EMF. It could be the cable, because sometimes if the cable guy doesn't do his job right, it's unshielded and it'll throw off high EMF. I found that in a couple investigations.
Definitely, and but. You know, just those three pieces of equipment, I use the Moditronic tri-field and the natural tri-field. I had to put a light in the natural tri-field because it doesn't have a light in there, so I had to put a little LED light on it so I could see what was going on. And those two I actually highly rely on because they have different settings that I like to change up. You know, if I think it's man-made frequencies, I could actually go in and test ion some to see how quickly the ions are settling. In areas that ions settle quicker, I've noticed it's more manipulation of the electromagnetic spectrum. So that's when you get your so-called paranormal activity, communications, like EVPs. And, you know, I thought it was great, you know, that I actually sat there and researched this because, of course, they do come with books, the tri-field, the Moditronic, and the natural come with books on how to use different settings. But, you know, everyone uses the K2 because they see it on TV a lot. And what I'm using the K2 for is just to test for human frequencies. You could walk by people, even if they're not using their cell phone, and see who has a cell phone on them and why is it on. And so,
well, you know why they like the K2? Because it has pretty lights. That's why they like the K2. It's not because it's cause you can find who left their cell phone on in an investigation, because it's got the pretty lights and the light up, you know.
The pretty blinky lights.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I thought, well, let's get deeper in this. Let's actually go through and test other equipment. EMF meters, as long as they're created by reputable companies, you know, you buy one from an electronics company, you know you're not going to be steered wrong. And that's where I was blind. It's actually an electrician's EMF meter, and it works great. It actually provides me with solid information, not only in milligauss, but volts, too, so I can see what volts relate to what milligauss, how much energy is being pulled through when something happens. So that's actually, you know, good that, you know, I have this, and it also will help me identify the range of where the actual, you know, short in the wall is, or where we might have more activity. There's a lot of EMF meters made out there right now that I have trouble understanding, because sometimes you could just be sitting there and they're set off by themselves. And, you know, we understand that energy is always moving through the atmosphere, but my question is, why is it, you know, setting off, you know, as opposed to, you know, I have the millimeter now and the my EMF meter, and I forgot who makes it, and I don't want to make a lot of noise right now. So I'll, if anyone wants to know, I'll actually post it on my Facebook wall more than likely tomorrow morning. But, you know, it's definitely one of those where you really have to question things and figure out what you're using right now, because there's a lot of equipment, you know, that, you know, is not shielded correctly. Like RT-EVP, it has the ghost box option, but there's no shielding on it whatsoever, so you're receiving a lot of outplay frequencies. And so when you do that, I love Ben and Jerry's. I love Americana Dream. But, or Half Bake is good sometimes, too. But it's not shielded properly. So, you know, I got a few EVPs before I listened to it, and I said, that's a radio station. You know, you could hear the music and the phaser sound and the Sunday, 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 you know, the phaser sound in it. But, you know, now it's audio matrixing, because they don't understand that you have to make sure you showed off your equipment. My equipment is pretty much shielded in the Faraday cage that's attached to me as a ground. That's another thing, is people do shield things, but they don't ground it right. The Ableist, I found a way to compact it, make it smaller, and I use an actual wrist ground that electricians use to ground it to themselves, because that's the problem I was having. I was receiving all kinds of frequencies, outplayed frequencies. I was picking up truckers passing by, I was picking up music, I was picking up some other frequencies I didn't really understand, because they're kind of jumbled, but it was still outside frequencies. As soon as I Faraday caged it and put on that ground to myself, all that disappeared. And, you know, with the ghost boxes, they're not shielded either. I actually saw one that was close enough to be shielded. The team actually took the ghost box and put it in a copper Faraday cage, but they didn't ground it. So they're still receiving, you know, outside interferences, because there's no ground. We're talking about ice cream.
Yeah. It's kind of hard when people are talking about ice cream and you're trying to talk about something else. It kind of throws you for a second.
Oh, it does, because you're like, oh, man, ice cream sounds great right now.
No, it doesn't. I just had a cinnamon and sugar. They call it a. To me, it tastes like a sopapilla that's been underinflated. It's like a really thick tortilla with cinnamon and sugar and butter, and it's cooked. So I'm full to my gills. So.
Yeah, this is where you go in the 30 second. You're listening to LiveParanormal.com. This is Boundaries of Reality with your host, David Garcia, and co-hosting Carla Ferriton. Join us at www.liveparanormal.com, where we talk about snack foods and some paranormal stuff, too.
And we'll talk about ice cream.
Okay, we got a... It's Mike's fault. He started it, so...
Yeah, exactly. But what I was going to say, I have something that I read on one of my groups that, you know, you're talking about putting things in a Faraday cage. They took something that has like, it's called solar cloth. It's kind of like a metal, but it you know, its melting point is like 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit. And they used it to make like a Faraday cage for some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and said that it's like super shielding, you know.
Yeah. I actually
I made a comment about I should make a suit out of that for when I investigate, and they said it wouldn't work, and I just thought it was funny. I was just being stupid.
Yeah. Well, frequencies, you know, travel in different patterns as opposed to the manipulation of electromagnetic radiation. So I actually decided to make a big Faraday cage, and I put all my equipment in there, and I actually captured some static discharge around the equipment, as, of course, the equipment's going crazy on the inside. You know, the the K2 was actually just, it didn't blink, it actually just went solid, and the Modi-tronic was going off full blast, and the trifold was reading off the charts, the actual light on the inside. I made it to blink. So it just blinks when it goes beyond its actual reach of energy. So it's the same thing as it going into red, but at least I have an identifier, so it starts blinking. It gets annoying sometimes, but it's good to know that you're off the charts and the actual energy that's in the atmosphere right now. So something is definitely happening. And it was actually a great experiment just to throw it in there and see what would happen. And I still got paranormal activity, but I got no actual man-made frequencies. Unfortunately, what happened is when I was putting the Faraday cage away, I actually pinched the ground in the door, so it exposed the wiring. So I had to buy a new one. And I finally bought one. It was just being lazy getting over to Radio Shack.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, we had Tara come and visit us. And so she got to see the Ableist in action. It was the first time in, you know, about almost a little bit more than a year that we actually pulled it out, dusted it off, started using it again. So she got a chance to actually, you know, be here with the live Ableist session and see what it was like, you know, to listen and hear that there's no outside, you know, contamination, and see us just sit there and just wait a few minutes like we usually do. I know there was one time that we got started, and I was sitting there, and, you know, the reason why we do it is the testing. It's, you know, to test with people. And we just sit there, and usually we get a few minutes. You know, I was actually out of it that night, so I was still sitting at the equipment, and Tina was having conversation with something. And all of a sudden, it just clicked in my head. I'm like, who is Tina talking to? And that's when, you know, selective hearing. And I went, oh, my gosh, you know, she's been doing this Ableist session for like 15, 20 minutes. It's something that just started talking, you know, and, you know, her, she doesn't really need it. I need it more of. And so she wasn't really using it, but that's when I noticed that she was hearing stuff and not all of it came through, but enough was coming through to identify. And that's why we do it. I do it as a test. And as soon as I'm satisfied, I'm going to, you know, get it patented. So that's why people can turn around and sell it as their own idea and let people make it themselves. So people, I'll pretty much make them one for the price of the parts and shipping. You know, that's it.
That's not too bad.
No, I mean, I'm not really selling it. I'm just giving it to people to test themselves, you know. Yeah, give this a try. Mine is pretty much the only beta model. There's other people who I gave them quick fixes.
Uh-huh.
But mine has a little bit more than, you know, soldered on. And theirs has, and it was just a quick fix, go buy this and that, and then you pretty much get as close as you can without me having to solder in, you know, parts.
Yeah. Exactly. And you said if you do ever go into parts, I'll get 0001 that comes out.
Yeah, production will be pretty much just the cost of the item, parts, and shipping. For
well,
you, I'll
basic.
Just make you a free one.
That's basically what a lot of them do. I mean, they say you put like $50,000 or $60,000 into manufacturing these things, and all these teams, you know, they want to test it out without buying it, you know. And a lot of the people, you know, that place you keep mentioning, they have a little thing out, and they've sent it to a lot of teams. You know, I think they figure out their budget, you know, how many gimmies they can give out, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
So more,
give it to one person, you should give it to everyone. You know what I mean? You know.
Yeah.
I don't think one team is better than another type thing.
I don't either. Another research piece of equipment that's used right now is cameras, digital cameras, video cameras. We have the, of course, infrared, the IR cameras. We have the full spectrum. We have the thermal cameras. The IR cameras are great to see in the dark. Capturing energy, you're just going to see what's called glitter effect. It's pretty much just static discharge.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed on full spectrum, though, it actually catches a little bit more big, more resonance on it, so it's a bigger spark of light. It just looks like glitter is moving around, and most of the time you could actually find it hovering near your, devices. So if you're holding your, a device to measure the energy or the, activity, you're not capturing things. You need to put it down and back away and just let the camera concentrate just right above the actual item, and you'll capture, the static discharge. People all say, oh, orbs, and no, it doesn't look anything like orbs. You'll notice that it has no particular pattern to it. It just looks like little lightning bolts going off, more of a glitter look to it. It's that static discharge, the manipulation of the energy and the dispersing of energy, the positive and negative meeting, and the ions, starting to settle again.
The one thing I noticed with, you're talking about the dust picking up, picking up colors and stuff. I was on an investigation, and a team down in Houston had put out a box that, had like LED blue lights in it. And they said it kind of draws the spirits in type thing, and they stuck it in a room that's supposedly cold, to see if it would draw them in. And in the room in between it and the other room, they put in an EM cone. And I don't think anything ever really came in, but the problem is with that blue light, it was making all the dust glow in the dark. I mean, I'm not kidding you. You could see the dust floating in the air. It just literally made it all sparkly and pretty. It looked like a vampire sneeze,
Yeah.
I thought that one was an epic fail.
Even using the red light flashlights, I actually, here's a quick tip to make a red light flashlight. Go to your local auto store, buy the tape that they use to patch over on the taillights, and just take a little X-Acto knife and cut a circle and put it on a LED light, so you're not spending like $30-$40. You're just spending literally $5 at the local gas station for an LED red flashlight.
I have two rolls in my kit, and when I'm on a legitimate investigation, if somebody has an LED and they keep shining my eyes, they pick me off and get my gig bag and dig out my carpet knife, and I put it on theirs. I don't care if it picks them off, but I'm like, you're blinding me. You're messing up the IR with your flashlight, putting it in everybody's eyes and into the camera, so we're going to fix that.
With the infrared lighting, there's two ways to make it. The way I like it that actually captures most of the energy as a filter is the process unexposed 35-millimeter film, the two pieces of it. And a lot of people use the blue and red gels that you get at art stores. What I want to try to do is actually put that blue and red gel in a flashlight, because it's going to look like a greenish. And green is a lot better for your eyes than red is. So I'm going to try that out, see how it works, because it might be just too much of a filter. Most of my
blue and red would make more of a purple than a green. It would be yellow and blue that would make the green.
Well, if you see those pictures, usually you could tell what sort of infrared camera people are using. Usually a white look to it is the 35-millimeter unexposed process film. And if you get more of a green...
I know Justin did that. He put two pieces of that expose, like what's on the end of, when you sent your 35-millimeter film in. He cut two of those and stuck it in
a camera, and he made an X-ray camera, and you could literally, he could literally take a picture of you, and he could see what your bra looked like. So you can go a little too far.
Yeah, using the gels, what happens with the gels, it gives it a green look, and you don't get that much of a depth perception because it doesn't draw on the light as much. That's why I like the 35 millimeter unexposed processed film version, because it pulls in a lot of light. You'll notice usually the pictures you'll notice is you could only see what looks like walleye vision, like a circle. And I think it's because of that two different filter colors are actually affecting the pulling in of the light. One might be blocking out the other more, as it you know, opposed to the same filter just doubling up on it. I love the full spectrum camera. I made a no light full spectrum camera, meaning I don't need no infrared lighting. I don't need any black lighting or any lighting whatsoever. And it works great, but it's really slow, and the frame rate is as slow as well. So that's the reason I don't like it. So if something happens, you're losing 2 seconds. So that means if a cup moves, all of a sudden you're just going to see the cup on one side and then move to the other side. I just put it out there just to capture those pictures like that, just to see if something does move. Also, the static discharge, you could capture that because, of course, it doesn't like disappear right away. It slowly fades away. Let's see, thermal cameras. Actually, let's rewind a bit. With cameras, of course, since energy has no mass whatsoever, you're not going to capture an apparition on camera, which includes digital and video cameras. And the reason why is that it has no mass whatsoever, so it's not going to look like a person walking by. And, you know, if you understand energy, you understand that energy has no form, so you're not going to see a person walking by. And most of the time with cameras, it actually has to hit solid objects for the picture to reflect back. So, it's, you know, it's kind of like a reflective thing. You know, the CCD chip sends out light, it reflects back to the image. Going to thermal cameras, I actually talked to a FLIR engineer with FLIR, and we actually had a great talk. And, you know, I talked to him about how it measures temperature and whatnot. And the temperature is actually measured on an infrared basis. The information sent out through infrared lighting and bounces back. So unless, of course, you have something solid with a measurement of energy, you're not going to get anything. You could get reflected, you know, images of yourself on, you know, things like walls, depending on the matte of the paint. You know, so you can literally put a hand on a wall and then turn away and come back a few minutes later, and it's still going to register a heat signature because, you know, the heat doesn't, you know, disappear right away. It's still there because it doesn't have a heat sink, so it doesn't eliminate slow, you know, really quick. It slowly goes away. So, again, it's just research, and so people are spending so much money on these, you know, thermal cameras, and unfortunately, they're not doing the research that they don't need to spend that much money. Actually, what you could use a thermal camera for is to talk to people. You could use it as a lie detector. There was a report how thermal cameras are now being used as lie detectors because it measures the pattern of the body heat, and the body naturally puts out a heat source when a person's lying. So I thought that was interesting.
Exactly. I mean, that would be the best way to, you know, do a lie detecting. You know, I mean, there's not too many people that know how to control their body temperatures. You know what I mean?
Oh no, I mean they could, you know, like almost anyone could cheat a lie detector. To be honest, because even if you get nervous, what they're looking for, the specialist is actually the polygraph specialist. They're just looking for you to stumble on your own words. So, you know, they'll just, you know, oh, I noticed in this question you answered this. Why did you answer it that way? So now you're like, oh, you know, they're trying to make you stumble on yourself. So that's why a lot of people request a lie detector, you know, the polygraph testing, because they know they can get away with it. And but now if you take a thermal camera polygraph testing and the polygrapher could actually figure out that they're lying, A Radio Shack engineer's book. I actually saw one at the Radio Shack and I was going to pick it up. Last but not least, I hate these items, the action reaction items. And those are, of course, the the obelisks. And what's the other one? RXP90 or RX90 or RX60, whatever. You know, where you ask the question and it pulls up an answer to a database. I actually had a team who was really excited about their obelisk. And I said, you know what? If you could cut the wire for the microphone and get a response, I'd be interested. So they cut the wire. For the longest time, they didn't get a response. Nothing happened. And all of a sudden, they actually got an answer. And I said, I am interested, you know, because they didn't have that microphone. You know, I call it a Simon Says of equipment. You know, you ask a question, of course, you're going to get an answer back because it's just going to say up, down, left, right, John, Joe, Bob, you know, whatever is built into that dictionary. It's just going to pull it right back out and it's going to respond.
Exactly. I mean, especially the iPhone and the Droid app. I mean, they have one that's an EMF detector. Think about it.
Yeah.
All it's detecting, especially the ghost radar, because it's basically a huge EMF detector, all it's detecting is where your tower is and the nearest cell phones are. It's not really, it's not actually testing the EMF that in the frequency range of a ghost. And that's my favorite one to ask quantum mechanics when they're on a show just to play with them.
So that actually is bringing us close to the end of the show here. So if you're at the other site, please come join us at www.lifeparanormal.com. We're very interactive. We're a web-based community. Definitely, I would say, the best social networking and chat place for paranormal in pretty much the United States right now. So come join us, and, you know, even next week, tomorrow, tonight, I'm not sure, do we even have anyone next? I know there was supposed to be
someone. I don't know. He hasn't showed up the last 2 weeks. Hopefully he'll show up this week. It's Reverend Jim Wilhelmson. I never pronounced it right, so I say it really slow like I'm a retard because I never pronounced it right.
I would just
say it's called Alternate Realities. We have two websites. One, echoesofenoch.com, and the other one is paapsi.org, I think.
Yeah, I think people should just come anyways. Show your support and donate to Life Paranormal.
Jim Rock, if 100 people came in and sent him a dime, he would be a happy man. He'd have $10 more than he had.
Yeah. Well, everyone, thank you for joining us tonight for Boundaries of Reality. I thank you again, Carla, for being here each week and giving us that awesome, strange, and weird news.
Enjoy it, Abel.
All right. Well, everyone, have a great night. Enjoy it. You know, come join us next week. We're going to have some more awesome, strange, and weird stuff. So have a great night.
Boundaries of Reality with their host, Abel Garcia.
Listening to Live Paranormal Radio at liveparanormal.com.